Hi, this is Chris from the Stage Left podcast. 2 days before the sad passing of Mark E. Smith, we recorded a 90-minute interview with Stuart Lee about his creative processes, his relationship with music and the value of art in the digital age. During the interview, Stuart spoke fondly of Mark's enormous impact on his career. Stuart was glowing when talking about Mark, and he was happy for us to put this out this morning in light of last night's sad news. It's a really poignant listen in retrospect. The remaining full 90-minute episode will be available in the next week at thestageleftpodcast.com. But recorded Monday the 22nd of January, this is Stuart Lee on Mark E. Smith. So a band that you've done 100 interviews about, The Fall.
Yeah.
And I know, I think the first gig you ever went to, or one of the first gigs you went to, was to see them and you got spiked with LSD, is that
Yeah, right? I think so, in retrospect. I didn't realise at the time, and now I look back on it.
They're a band I've actually never seen live, and I'm going to go and see them. So you've obviously done a lot of interviews about them, but for listeners, I mean, we have listeners all over the world, and if those who might not know them, what is it that they're missing out on?
Well, there's lots of great things about The Fall. One is that the singer and the main person, Mark E. Smith, appears not to be able to sing, but if you try to do what he does, you can't do it. It's an engineer who'd worked on one of their records said it's a bit like Miles Davis's trumpet playing. You can't really load anything against it, and when the vocal comes in, it changes the colour of everything around it. Yeah. You know, So What, probably the most famous Miles Davis track. It sort of do 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 do. It bops along that for a bit, and then his trumpet comes in. It just goes just one note, and everything goes bang off. All changed, and that's what Mark Smith's voice is like. It's bizarre. Yeah. It's utterly distinctive. It's like a sort of clever dog that can speak, barking at you. and he went through a phase where he was known for writing very complex, clever lyrics. Now he's incoherent. He just sounds like it's growling. He's having fun with the actual tonality of what his throat can do. That isn't that sort of non-musical. Brilliant. The timing of it's brilliant. I think it's really funny.
Yeah.
In a way that people often miss. They tend to think he's mad, but actually it seems to me he's having an elaborate joke at the expense of the world. A few years ago they got to play Glastonbury again, and Twitter was alive with the fact that there was appears to be a piss stain on his trousers. I think he thought, what would be the funniest thing I could do? Be to go on national television with a piss stain on my trousers. Whereas Chris Martin went on that benefit show with a piss stain on his trousers and clearly wasn't aware of it at Manchester Arena. Yeah. You know, so that's it. There's been a lot of musicians in it, which people seem to think is funny, but actually it's been going like 40 odd years now, so there's going to be a lot of heft, and the sound is still to this day built on what he obviously liked as a child in the immediate pre-punk era, which was all the bands of the early 70s and mid 70s and late 60s that we've sort of tend to forget existed, because we tend to think of it as glam rock and progressive rock, but it's Can and the Stooges and garage punk and old dub reggae, all those kind of things are mixed up in there. It's basically what formed the sensibilities of that generation, infinitely recombined. As a fan, I've learned a lot from them, in that the set list for different nights can be essentially the same, but the mood will totally alter it.
How?
Well, I just don't know. It's just something about... You say, do we go on in character? I think sometimes, either consciously or through the use of wrong amounts of alcohol, he kind of can go in and just be a different person, and that changes the whole thing. When they've got little residencies places, if I'm not working, I'll go all 4 nights. The last one I went to 3 or 4 nights in a row about a year and a half ago in Highbury Garage. And some nights the same song would be 20 minutes and then 4 the next night.
Right, so
just depending on whether it kind of caught fire. I think he's done a good thing as well, which I probably have assimilated, which is that by making himself not clubbable, he's removed himself from the social club of rock through being rude, behaving badly, and by being consistently good, and by work turning a new thing around every year. I mean, then you're not in the you're not in competition. Yeah. You're sort of your own thing, and like, you can hate The Fall, you can not like it, you can say it makes you feel sick to listen to, but on its own terms, it's entirely succeeded. So that kind of is like what I try to think is, you can't really give me a bad review, because I always do what I've tried to do, and also if it does go badly, then that's what would happen to that character anyway. Of course, it would go badly, because he's sort of got a gene towards self-sabotage, so it's sort of, it's kind of, they create this protective bubble around them. I'm really grateful as well, because like they've had sort of 35 years of adventures going to see them, and I will, when he finally doesn't do it anymore. I don't know what it'll take to stop him. He did the last few dates in a wheelchair with a bloated face as a result of some drug reaction to medication he'd been prescribed.
When he still finally ended it. Still
yeah, when it finally isn't happening, it will be for a normal person, like if Manchester United were suddenly to just not exist anymore. Mm. It's like a thing that you've got that you can hang on to in your life, and it's always so exciting to think what's going to come up with next. And the last album, I thought, was still like one of the, there were things in it that made me laugh out loud with the audacity of them, like, and the kids thought it was so funny, and they didn't really understand that it was even music. They thought it was just a thing, and they really loved it.
There's a great story about it when it's really hard to get on the bill for Jules Holland, Late with Jules Holland, and they were asked to go on Late with Jules Holland, and he agreed to do it, but it was written into the contract that Jules Holland wouldn't play piano on this.
He was not allowed to play piano. Yeah, I know, this is the thing, right? That's a really funny thing to do, and you kind of, I mean, sometimes I'll go and see them, and I think, is he really like slagging me off? Or? And then people go, have you heard this? And the gig I was at, and there's like words have been changed to say that. I don't know really? Him, right? It's like, I thought, like, the stuff about me like slagging me off.
Really?
And yeah, I think it's really funny. It's like, I don't mind at all. But I think it's, I would have had a very different life without them. Because also, in the post-punk era, you know, a lot of bands would name drop like existentialist writers or weird art or in the lyrics, and then you'd go and check it out. But it did mean they probably read them. Now it means they've probably looked at the Wikipedia entry. But you know, it got me to read Camus and Arthur Machen and things that I really like, because they were bleeding through those words, and also the things that influenced them, which are now readily available, like Can or the Velvet Underground. They were hard to find, those records, in those days, and you know, it was like you've been given a reading list almost, and you have to go and follow it up, you know.